Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today says the more time you spend in the natural world, the more you open up to how it works. Shaman Victoria Hunt is from a family of ultrasensitives and has studied metaphysics and earth spirituality for over 20 years, especially Celtic spirituality. She is a third-level Reiki master and author of a previous book, Animal Omens. She now has a new book, Kiss the Wind, Understanding the Elementals and Fairies. She says when we simply take a walk in nature, we can travel into fairy and bring back wisdom from that consciousness to help make things better for everyone on this planet. Victoria Hunt, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you say in your book that fairy, it both designates a place and a being.
Right.
Now, when you were describing fairies, I was a little bit puzzled because here's what you say about them. You say, all the things they are or are not, one thing sure, you'll never run across a real fairy with butterfly wings sprinkling pixie dust around.
Right, correct.
And then I look back at your cover on your book, and here is a young woman, blonde hair, blue eyes, with wings.
I have no control over the book cover.
Okay. I suspected that
my
maybe
publishing company, yeah, but
said, well, if she writes a book about fairies, we'll put this young woman on the cover with wings like we think a fairy would look.
Right. And that was really actually kind of interesting because I knew before they were going to use, I knew before what the cover was, what it was going to be. And sure enough, I just thought, oh, no, they're going to put wings on fairies. Sure enough, it was. And at first I was rather upset because I say in the book that there's
they don't have and
wings.
Also there are little sparkles like pixie dust around
right,
her.
Right. But then I got to thinking, well, most people don't really know the truth of how fairies actually ended up with wings. And so they're not going to pick up a book that just has a person on the front that they don't, you know, associate with a fairy, quote. So
as a rather symbol of a fairy, you let it go with the this young one with wings.
Right, right. And besides that, I think it's a great cover.
I'm actually really happy
with the cover now. I've gotten over the wing thing.
Okay. Well, what else can you tell us about fairies then, besides the fact they don't have wings?
Okay, well, let me tell you why, because it really makes people upset when you say that. They don't like to hear that fairies don't have wings.
But okay, you go back a few years
to the Victorian era. Right. You have to go back farther than the Victorian era to realize that the fairies were the old gods, that they were powerful beings who dwelt in this existence as well as in the other world, what the Celts call the other world, and they traversed back and forth between the two. And it was no big deal. I mean, you can read any of the myths and legends and history. It was no big deal to walk side by side by one or see them pass or whatever. But they didn't have wings. They were as tall or taller than humans, very powerful nature spirits is what they were. And it wasn't until the Victorian era when they got added wings to them. Now, we all know about, well, we don't know, maybe some of us don't know, but the quantum physics has proved that everything's vibrational and that everything vibrates at a certain level. The higher it vibrates, the more ethereal it is, and the lower it vibrates, the more dense it appears. So once it gets to a certain vibration, it vibrates out of our sight or our third dimensional mind frame that we are, you know, living in. And so the fairies can actually, because they vibrate at a higher level, they can traverse back and forth between their world and ours. So if they can travel back and forth between time and space, why do they need wings? Wings is something that humanity has put on them.
Well, I think because we believe, well, if you can move like that, you must surely have wings. How else could a being move like that?
Yeah, we need to get out of our old mindset, you know, and see past, you know, the what science is telling us way back then. And then Victorians, I don't know if you know much about the Victorian era, but they love to embellish. I mean, if you look at anything that has to do with Victorian architecture or the interiors or anything, I mean, it's just packed and it's ornate. I mean, they didn't have just like one wallpaper. They had 16 wallpapers in one room, you know, and everything was really ornate. And so they just thought, well, if fairies are good, then adding something to them is going to make them that much better.
So, well, going back even farther than the Victorian era, if we go to France, there are these fairy tales. That's the translation for the French, these fairy tales. And that is about all most of us know about fairies, is what we learned when we heard these stories when we were children.
Right, right. You just have to study history.
But, you know, I was thinking when I was reading your book, for example, the fairy tale about Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, mm-hmm. the fact that here were these short men mm-hmm. who dressed like gnomes mm-hmm. and who were miners. And there was one named Grumpy.
Yeah.
So when I was reading your chapter about gnomes, I thought, boy, this sounds like who Snow White was her companions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The gnomes are the gnomes and the...
Now, I am switching from fairies to gnomes.
Right,
now.
Because the gnomes would be considered under elementals, which are different than the fairies. The elementals are what animate earth, air, fire, and water. They're the actual spirits that animate the substance. They aren't the substance themselves. They are the spirit that animates it. And makes it so we as humans and the rest of the population in the world and stuff can actually exist. So they're the ones that animate that. And because humans are visual, they have to put a picture to something to make it real. So they've don't really have form, but because like what I just said, they have to have a form so we can see. So we've made them look like the Undines would be like Nixies or mermaids or something like that. The gnomes look like gnomes. The sylphs are very ethereal. They look tall and skinny and kind of like cloud beings that you see that have the big long wings in the sky, you know. Those would be the sylphs. And then the salamanders are in fire since they animate fire. And if you stare at a fire, you'll see something that looks like a salamander in there. That moves around when that's so visually, that's what we've put on them. So the salamanders would look like a salamander.
My guest is Victoria Hunt, and she has a new book, Kiss the Wind, Understanding the Elementals and Fairies. Now, fairies, I mentioned we're somewhat familiar with because of stories when we were children. But elementals is such an alien idea to most of us here in this culture. And you're saying that they are associated with Earth. And I like to go in order of density. So I start with Earth mm-hmm. when I'm naming
right.
these for myself.
That works.
you went according to the directions on the compass. But so you have Earth, mm-hmm. and that's associated with the North. And then I would go next to water, and
oh,
that's
okay.
the sylphs that you're referring to. Mm-hmm. And then fire, and then air, the least dense. And at this time of year, we think about winter. So here are the gnomes, and we have this idea, and so far back, we don't probably know where this idea came, that there are these little elves who live in the north, and as far north as you can go is the North Pole. Mm-hmm. So here we have these little beings busy at the North Pole at this time of year, at winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
So the gnomes are associated with north and with the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the element. This is why they're called elementals. If people wonder, elementals, what is that? And you relate them to those four elements of earth, water, fire, and air.
Right.
So what are elves like then? Because about all most of us know about elves is perhaps Santa's helpers.
Right. I don't really know a whole lot about how the elves came to be Santa's helpers.
But you know about elves, though.
But the elves are... In Norse mythology or Scandinavian, actually, any mythology of Scandinavian they are pretty much like Tolkien's elves that he wrote about. And they were, again, going back to what we originally started on, the fairies that are now designated as fairies. They were the old gods. And there's...
Because you mentioned in your chapter, you mentioned elves in your chapter on fairies, but you also say they're a separate caste.
They are. They are totally separate from what people would consider fairies now. And really, the only way you can describe them was think of Tolkien. Anyway, you know, I mean, that's pretty much where he got all his story anyway, was from Finland and all the Norse Scandinavian countries. And if you read any of the Old Norse mythology, then that's what they are. They were the old gods.
Well, what are elves? You mentioned they're the color you typically see an elf in is?
Green.
Green.
Yeah, sometimes red, sometimes white.
And you said the nobility were dressed in red or white. So I'm thinking, okay, here are these little elves at Santa's workshop wearing green. And what color does Santa wear? He wears green and white. Red and white,
yeah.
Mostly red.
Uh-huh.
And he is described as a jolly old elf in this Christmas poem that we're so familiar with, A Visit from St. Nick. So Santa is described as a jolly old elf.
Mm-hmm.
And then these other elf helpers are rather personable, unlike the gnomes, which might be, as you use the word, grumpy.
They're more grumpy.
And would you say, because you say that, I guess still, since you wrote the book, that you still have a gnome in your backyard.
Oh, yeah, he's back there.
And what is his personality like?
He's grumpy. He never is nothing but grumpy. You know, he's not really that way, I don't think, deliberately. I think that's just their nature. You know, just they live underground and, you know, they attend to all the things that has to do with earth and growth and, you know.
And I also thought of another fairy tale, because you say your gnome won't tell you his name.
Nope.
And that is also, there's a fairy tale about that. Not revealing a name.
Yeah, is that Rumpelstiltskin? Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Victoria Hunt, and she has written a book about elementals and fairies. And we mentioned the fact that elves are separate from fairies. And fairies are then, you say they don't have wings, but how would you contrast fairies from, you've mentioned some differences, the elementals are nature spirits. And how would you contrast fairies and elementals, as the title of your book tells us, you're going to help us understand these two beings.
Well,
for example, physically, you mentioned that we attach, some are tall and thin, some are short, because we need a visual image of these beings.
Well, since they can travel back and forth through space, they can also change shape. So if you expect to see a fairy with wings, chances are you probably will, because they will take whatever is in your mind. They're very tricky. They'll take whatever in your mind and they'll run with it, basically. And so if you expect to see them with wings, then you probably will see them with wings. If you don't expect to, then you probably won't. But what they are individually is wingless. But they will take whatever, like I said, whatever you expect to see them, and that's the way they'll appear.
Well, I wish I had had your book. I guess 30 years ago, I had a niece. She was about 5 years old at the time, and she described these mischievous, she didn't use this word, not a five-year-old.
Right.
These mischievous little invisible creatures that interacted with her, and they weren't always very nice. However, if they wanted to make up for something they had done, they would wear her favorite color as a way of doing that. And if you had just seen her words written down, you wouldn't think much about it. But to see her telling this, she was so animated. It was all so real to her that I began to think, what is this that's going on? And so I went to the library. This is before the days of Google. Went to the library and tried to find what I could about what is this that she is seeing and interacting with that the rest of us can't see. And I didn't have much luck, so I wish I had had your book then. Another thing that made me believe something was going on is way away in another state, I happened to be visiting a cousin of hers. I don't know if they were distant cousins even at that. And she was describing the same kind of phenomenon that these little invisible friends, and I even hesitate to call them friends since they were playing tricks on them, like you were just saying.
Yes, they're very tricky.
And she described so much the same personalities. And Maria, this was my niece, said they lived in the ground. And all these things that she, as a five-year-old, would have no way of knowing, this is what fairies are supposed to do, or this is what elementals are supposed to be like. She would have no way of knowing that. And so a few years went by, and I asked her about them again. She says, oh, I don't remember. I think I must have made that up. Or she totally discounted it. And I was rather disappointed, because I guess other adults either didn't listen or didn't believe what she was saying, but she was so convincing.
Right.
And I think it's easy for people to read this in the book and say, that Victoria Hunt, she just got a screw loose there. She's seen gnomes. I've heard that all my life. Well, I came across a poem that, I think most people are familiar with this poem by the English poet William Wordsworth. And he wrote, "There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth and every common sight, did to me seem appareled in celestial light. The glory and the freshness of a dream is not now as it hath been of yore. Turn wheresoever I may, by day or night, the things which I have seen, I now can see no more." So he was lamenting the fact that children have this insight, this curiosity, this creativity that they lose. And he is lamenting this, that he has lost that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, children are more open. They haven't been conditioned by society to, you know, oh, well, no, you know, you're just making that up, or it's your imagination, or you had bad pizza last night, or whatever it is. You know, we aren't honored as adults to own those things in us that are innate, that we know, but we've pushed to the back of our brain because, you know, it's taboo, or it's childish, or it's silly, or, you know. My dad's, for instance, always told me, and I never really knew why until I got older, was you don't tell people things. Don't tell people anything because they'll think you're crazy. I heard that a lot. And like I said, when I was little, I had no idea what he was talking about. But as I got older, I realized that that was his own experience, because we are fairy seers. It's hereditary.
In your family.
In my family, right.
Well, I think that's the case with my niece, that when she was 5 years old, she didn't know you weren't supposed to talk about things like that and tell people those things. And then as she got older, she realized, oh, that's not something you tell people. And I think she'd convinced herself.
Oh, yeah, that, absolutely. Well, you know, it's just like if you don't own something, just like if you don't use it, you lose it, right? If you don't own it, if you can't keep that spark going or that association with the fairies that you happen to have when you're little going, it diminishes. Who's going to honor that in you when you're an adult?
Well, this is a sentence that I think people will realize you're right about this, Victoria. You say, "Humans have detached themselves from the natural world and the knowledge that life on this planet works together as a whole cohesive unit, with no one thing or another being better or more evolved." We've detached ourselves from the natural world. And I didn't appreciate that fact until later as an adult in recent years. I realized how important it was to go outside, to feel what the weather is, to feel what winter solstice feels like.
Absolutely.
And I go and sit by the creek. And I realized all the years of my life I'd been indoors, where you don't feel the change in season.
No, you don't.
You don't see the water flowing. You don't see the animals. And it really, I see your book as a call to those of us humans to, like you say, get out and just take a walk.
Right, right. Yeah, we need to be outside, because that's how our ancestors lived. And they were connected to all of this. They knew all of this. You know, that we've closed ourselves off. From our innate knowing. And my very favorite quote goes, if I can remember it, it goes, "The prime reason for modern man's sense of alienation lies in the fact that he has cut himself off from nature and the roots of his ancestors."
Mm-hmm. So, and I think probably if you would ask a typical American when is winter solstice, they might give you a blank stare.
They have no idea.
Don't have any idea. And you mentioned in your book not only the Celtic traditions, because a lot of traditions celebrate winter solstice because it's such an obvious time of when the nights start getting longer again, and summer solstice, big celebration, cultures all over the world. Winter solstice probably primarily. But there are also these mid-season celebrations like May Day or Candlemas, 1st of February. And so I like that you bring out these, remind us of not just these four elements at times of the year, but also these in between. So you mentioned that people celebrate summer solstice, and tell us about summer solstice.
The summer solstice is on the opposite end of the wheel, across from Yule.
The Yule season, in December.
Right. December 21st. It's a set date now, but originally it wasn't. It just went whatever the rotation of the earth was going, you know, in the seasons and how they felt, you know, what was happening out in nature is when the date was. But the summer solstice is set on the 21st of June. And that's a really, there's two or three really special times for the Celts, particularly, of when the fairies come out. And because the veil between the worlds, their world and our world, is thin. And one of them is the summer solstice. And the other one is what they call Samhain, which is
Halloween.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We celebrate Halloween. And so that's kind of where, not kind of, that is where our Halloween celebration came from, was because the veil was between the worlds is thin, and so the spirits could go back and forth. And so the summer solstice is a real special time for the fairies. They come out, especially the trooping fairies.
So we have winter solstice, December 21st, summer solstice, June 21st, mm-hmm. and then what are the other two, the equinox celebrations?
Let's see me go around the wheel of the year here. That's, let's see, basically it's around Easter time,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is around the vernal equinox.
And when you mention Easter, I think people might be surprised where even that very word comes from.
Yeah, it comes
from that Christians use to celebrate the resurrection of Christ, and the term Easter
is a Norse goddess. Her name was Ostara, or Eostra, depending on how you want to say it. And that's where Easter comes from. That's where the name Easter comes from. And the celebration is the same, basically the same time. Just like Christmas is the same time celebration, the winter solstice, as Christmas. So just depending, like I said, the reason they've set it on certain dates, the celebration of Yule or Easter or whatever, the winter solstice or the summer solstice, is just so we could remember it. You know, but as I said, because of the changing of the seasons, you know, the days moved back and forth between two or three days. So a lot of times it was on December 21st. A lot of times it was, you know, on March 21st or April 21st, or, you know, depending on they lived outside, so it depended on the seasons, you know, and how the sun was rotating. And
And, for example, in between winter solstice and the vernal equinox, spring equinox, February 1st was celebrated.
Right, right. In February, in the Celtic, is called Imbolc. And it was basically a woman's celebration, because Imbolc was in honor of celebration of the goddess Brigid. And so she is the goddess of, it's a big, long details. It has to do with cows and birth and lambs. But Imbolc actually means ewe's milk. And it's just the start of when spring starts showing its head.
And these Celtic words are not easy to pronounce. So Samhain looks nothing like that, the way it is pronounced. But then there's Beltane, and that was between the spring equinox and the summer solstice, and that was May Day.
Right.
And people celebrate that, and I bet they don't realize its origins.
I'm sure they don't, yeah. And they probably don't realize that the maypole is a phallic symbol, and representing the male aspect of the god. And when you put it's a spring celebration, is what it is. And when the maypole goes down into the hole in the earth being female, is fertilization. So spring, you know, is reborn again every year at Beltane. So that's what they were celebrating. They were celebrating the seasonal aspects of the earth.
My guest is Victoria Hunt, and she has a new book, Kiss the Wind, Understanding the Elementals and Fairies. And the elementals are related to directions on the compass, and we see them. I'm going to put that word "see" in quotation marks. We mentioned the gnomes as the earth, and being earthy, attached to the earth, living underground, and then the element of water, these water fairies. And I'll bet people may have heard of Morgan Le Fay. Being the French word for fairy.
Right. Morgan the fairy.
And never made that connection before. And then fire, the next element, and I thought salamander. I'm not that familiar with salamanders, but then I think about the fact that fire is, you mentioned you can see that shape, mm-hmm. And you also give the symbols of inverted triangle or right side up triangle for these elements.
Right.
And so we have fire, the salamander, and then air, and the sylphs.
Mm-hmm.
And you say there are characteristics related to this, signs of the zodiac related to these characteristics of the elements. People who use their mind related to that air element.
Right.
So if you are in search of inspiration, Victoria, after you wrote your first book, because you say in your book that you wrote that one and you thought, oh, I'll write another book. And then there was nothing there.
Yeah, nothing. And nothing was coming.
So if you find yourself in that situation, what can you do if you know about elementals
you
and fairies?
You couldn't call on the sylphs and ask for help. They came and helped me with this book. So it's just a matter of being open to it, you know, and trusting what comes to you. And that's really hard for humans for some reason to trust themselves. But I think it's just because we've been conditioned not to trust ourselves. You know, if it's not solid and concrete and you can't put your hands on it, then
it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. So
what do you recommend for people if they want to explore this possibility for themselves?
Well, the reason I'm hesitating is because most people don't want to hear it, and a lot of people don't want to do it. You just need to spend time outdoors,
and
a lot of time outdoors.
And when you spend time outdoors, you become aware of things like you mentioned being, and I assume this was Bidwell Park. You didn't say it was Bidwell Park, but it sounded like Bidwell Park. And there were people ripping out, I'm going to call them weeds.
Oh, it's best not to get me started on that subject.
Because they probably didn't like to see you coming, because you pleaded with them, can't we please just leave a part of Bidwell Park
wild? Yeah.
Let the plants grow that they consider invasive plants. Couldn't we just let them be?
Well, it's best not to get me started on that, because that's a really sore subject with me.
But if you start to spend more time in nature, you start to see things differently, I think.
Yes, you do. Yes, you really do. You know, and when you're stripping out all the underbrush and all of that they consider invasive, you leave it sterile. It's sterile. You know, it's like they want to manage their yard. They want to manage it like they want it in this little box, this little manicured box, and they want to keep it that way. It's why it needs to be wild. It was wild, you know.
Well, and then it balances itself.
It does.
And if humans intrude, we create imbalance.
Absolutely. We're really good at that.
So take a walk in nature. Spend quiet time in nature, you're saying.
Yeah, as much as you possibly can.
And also, you have a glossary in your book. So people can review some of these terms that we've been talking about. Thank you, Victoria.
Oh, yes, you're welcome.
My guest has been Victoria Hunt. Her new book is Kiss the Wind, Understanding the Elementals and Fairies. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, kcho.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.